This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. 40 years ago, the controversial Supreme Court decision Roe v. Wade ushered in a new era of reproductive rights and touched off a culture war that has waged ever since. On the front lines of that battle are organizations like IPAS. The Chapel Hill Group has been a strong advocate for access to abortion ever since the Roe v. Wade decision. IPAS is celebrating its 40th anniversary tonight. Anu Kumar is with us. She's Executive Vice President for Development, Community Relations, and Community Access at IPAS. Anu, welcome. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me, Frank. It's a pleasure.
Tell us about how IPAS got started.
Well, IPAS, as you say, is celebrating our 40 years this year, and we're very excited to be here in Chapel Hill and to be celebrating with our friends this evening. You know, we began as an organization that was really focused on women's reproductive health and rights and continue to be so. We are the only global organization that's working to end the preventable deaths and injuries that are caused by unsafe abortion. It is, as you may know, abortion is one of the safest of all medical procedures, and there's no reason that women should be suffering and dying in 2013 from unsafe abortion. So for our 40 years, we've been focused on making sure that there are no more women that are suffering and dying.
Tell us more about the mission, particularly work overseas.
So we have 14 offices around the world, and you know, we've seen in the global arena a real change in progress in abortion laws. Countries as diverse as Nepal and Ethiopia have liberalized their abortion laws recently, and in those countries, IPAS has really been able to make meaningful change. So in Nepal, working with the government very closely, we've been able to reduce the number of women who are dying from unsafe abortion and actually reduce the number of maternal deaths by half. Significant progress. Similarly, in Ethiopia, we've seen that kind of progress. So I think overseas, we're seeing a tremendous opportunity and progress.
What do you think accounts for that in these traditional societies, a change in abortion laws? Why are they changing and liberalizing as they are?
Well, I mean, I think the reality on the ground, Frank, is that women are dying. I mean, it's really just that simple. In India alone, where I'm from, 10,000 women are dying every year from unsafe abortion. That's a woman every 2 hours. That is, you know, someone's wife, someone's daughter, someone's sister. So I think it's very personal, and people see it very personally and in their own lives on a day-to-day basis overseas. So a lot of the reason behind this change is to really save women's lives and to improve their health.
And I guess implied in all that is the fact that they had been illegal did nothing really to stop them. To stop abortions. People weren't not having abortions just because they were illegal.
Correct. We know around the world from data that the legality doesn't actually change the number of abortions that occurs. What does change is the safety of those abortions. So you're absolutely right that the legal status doesn't really alter that equation.
So while in places like Ethiopia, there have been a more progressive change with regard to abortion, in this country, not so much.
No. Unfortunately, the United States is one of a handful of countries that's actually moving backwards and imposing greater restrictions on access to safe abortion care. And so from our global experience at IPAS, we know that limits and restrictions to abortion care endangers women's health, endangers women's lives, and does nothing really to alter the fundamental decisions that women have to make.
What about here in North Carolina? Do women have access to the service they need, or what's access like here in North Carolina?
Well, access is being more and more limited in North Carolina. We've seen in this state assembly a significant reduction or significant increase, I should say, in the number of laws that are being proposed that would limit access. North Carolina already has mandatory waiting periods, scripted counseling, mandatory ultrasounds, parental consent. And now we're thinking of imposing even more restrictions. You know, this is really a situation where the people of this state of North Carolina need to ask ourselves, we know, what kind of society do we want to be?
Well, in Mississippi, I know Dr. Willie Parker is going to be your guest of honor.
That's right.
Tonight at your 40th anniversary celebration, and he is now working in Mississippi where apparently there is one abortion clinic operating. Well, tell us about the situation there and maybe give us a preview of what he wants to talk about.
I'd be happy to. Dr. Parker is one of two providers that fly into Mississippi to provide abortion services. He is extremely brave and courageous in what he's doing. There is only one clinic now remaining in Mississippi, whereas in 1981, there were 14 clinics. So we've seen a situation in Mississippi where access is severely limited. One of the things that Dr. Parker and I discussed was the extent to which poverty, whether it's here in the United States, in places like Mississippi or rural North Carolina, is really the same as poverty that I've seen overseas in Kenya or India. It's a matter of degree. We have real pockets of poverty in this country, and by limiting access, we are, you know, punishing poor women and essentially telling them we don't value you.
You know, you can talk about the statistics and what it does to women when they have or are forced to have unsafe abortions. Clearly, it results in unhealthy practices and often death. But what do you say to those whose heartfelt and faith-based conviction is that you're talking about a human life, and that human life in their heart and in their mind and in their deepest conviction begins at conception, and you are taking a human life here? And we can't just put it up against these other statistics.
Well, Dr. Parker actually speaks very powerfully to this. He actually approaches, as do many providers and many of us working in this field, from a position of deep faith and a conviction that the morality of the of what we're doing is correct. You know, we are saving the lives of women that are in front of us, women who are living and breathing in front of us, and who have their entire futures ahead of them. So I think that the arguments are not about when does life begin. That's kind of a red herring. The question is, what do we do for the living, those that are among us? I can give you a great example of a situation when abortion is completely restricted. And this is where I think I'm really concerned that this country might be headed. El Salvador is a country that has a complete and total ban on abortion for any reason. So in this situation, we had a case of a woman named Beatriz who was 22 years old, had a son, but also suffered from lupus and from kidney failure, was really ill. Found herself, she was pregnant, did not, and realized through her doctors that the pregnancy that she was carrying was of a fetus that was not viable. Her doctors recommended she have an abortion, and she ended the pregnancy to save her life. Not so easily done in El Salvador. So weeks of legal wrangling ensued, and ultimately the pregnancy ended. The baby did die within hours, and here we have a woman who suffered essentially needlessly for weeks on end because there was a complete and total ban.
The other side of this is, you know, we've talked about the controversy over abortion in this country. It has roiled since that decision, and it does have a kind of polarity with, I think, an ideological divide. We find most conservatives trying to restrict abortion, and most progressives, though there is a fair amount of crossover as well. On the conservative side, those who oppose abortion, interestingly enough, also oppose many of the things that would make life easier for those born into this world. And so if you are born into poverty, cutting education funding, cutting medical spending, cutting unemployment benefits, all the things that would make life better for those who are delivered into this world are restricted, and it's made more difficult for those born into this world. What do you say about that particular contradiction when you look at the arguments from the right?
Well, I mean, I think you said it best. It is a contradiction. We are concerned at IPASS about women's lives and women's futures, and we see the context in which they exist. And so for us, you know, the focus on reproductive rights and particularly abortion care is about making sure that women are healthy, that they can live the life they want to live, and they have every opportunity to pursue that life. So, you know, all the access to education and employment and all of those things are really deeply important to us.
When we talk about the efforts abroad, there is a critique as well that somehow the West and Western NGOs and Western progressives are imposing a kind of lifestyle and ideology on Western culture and on other cultures. And it's another form. It's kind of a neo-colonialism in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, IPASS takes a very different view. We have a policy where all of our offices are actually staffed by local nationals. We support local movements. The issues that we work on are embedded within local contexts. So we are very much aware and in tune with the local needs and societal context in which we are working. There is, as you know, a universal Declaration of Human Rights, and we firmly believe that women's reproductive rights is part of that declaration. Now, the achievement of those rights will vary in a country-by-country basis, and that's what IPASS and our country staff really help us to achieve, the local flavor of that.
And even though there's a, you talk about a global consensus, you can argue about who makes up that, that global universe that came to that consensus, and where those representatives of those nations may have come from, or how they were educated, or what their values are. But you talk about also very local kind of grassroots organizing efforts that are happening within those countries as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, our work has shown us that there are any, there are many organizations in the countries that we're active in that are very interested in making sure that their daughters, sisters, wives live and survive through their reproductive age. And I should point out that abortion is really a very common procedure. I mean, globally, there are 40 million abortions that take place every year. Now, we do know that nearly 22 million of those are unsafe. So our motivation at IPASS is to make sure that those abortions are done safely and under safe conditions. You know, it's just it's not true that it's a rare event. It's a common event. So how can we make this fairly common procedure a safe one?
Anu, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
Anu Kumar is Executive Vice President for Development and Community Relations and Community Access at IPASS. The group is celebrating its 40th anniversary tonight. Just ahead, an attorney and former journalist draws on his profession to write compelling fiction. You'll hear about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.